Everyone agrees, bacon makes everything better, even marketing. This is the Bacon Podcast, where you'll learn to cure your marketing
and make your business sizzle. Can't believe I said that.
Internet marketing, online marketing, social media tips and techniques. Now, to help you bring more bacon home, the master of marketing sizzle, Brian Basilico. This is the Bacon Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. I'm your host, Brian Basilico, and this is the podcast where you learn to make your business sizzle online. So are you ready to fry up some new business?
Hey, peeps, I am super excited. I have got a great guest today. His name is Nathan Frazier. Now, I know Nathan from one of my past podcast guests. His name is David Garfinkel. And I've been following David's podcast. It is the Copywriters Podcast, and it's actually produced by our guest, Nathan. So, Nathan, man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm excited to be on your show.
Man, it's a pleasure having you on. And it's I love the stuff that you're doing with David. I love the questions that you ask him. And also, I love following you because you've got some really great insights on copywriting, too. So that's what we're going to be talking about today is copywriting and marketing in general. But before we get there, I like people to get to know your backstory. So at one point, you were a rapper and you had your own studio, and then you became this, what you consider to be the high priest of propaganda. How did that transition happen, dude?
So I was, I grew up very poor, very leftist background. And me and my little brother started a little rap label out of our hometown in Fort Collins, Colorado. And we took some ill-gotten gains that we got from black market entrepreneurship. And we built a studio and started going out and doing concerts, going on little small tours around our local area. And our rap music became very political. And around that time was when 9/11 happened, and I started diving deep into all kinds of different conspiracy theories, and I started looking into things like MK Ultra, mind control programs, CIA infiltration into the media, all that crazy stuff that doesn't get taught to you in school. So I was always kind of very fascinated by maybe the more shadier side of mind control and persuasion and influence. And at one point in time, after running three businesses into the ground, I finally realized that I could actually use some of that knowledge and started understanding that a business without good marketing is just an expensive hobby. And so I started implementing some of the stuff that I had learned while studying MK Ultra and all of that kind of more shady stuff into the way I ran my businesses. We started becoming successful, and because of that background, because of where I don't come into marketing from a bachelor's degree in marketing. I come at it from studying propaganda and studying CIA programs. So people started calling me a propagandist. A lot of my fans that were following me before I became an entrepreneur started saying that I was a sellout propagandist. And instead of fighting it, I decided just to run with it. And so people started calling me the high priest of propaganda. The title fit. And that's kind of where I'm at today.
Cool, man. And you definitely live up to that title. There's no question about it. I love your stuff on Facebook. I suggest if you people want to be entertained, follow Nathan. That's all I'm going to say. It's a blast. So how did you and David connect up? Because you got into podcasting, and I know you were doing it before, but then David, you actually work as his producer and produce his podcast, and you're a great interviewer. I mean, you do a really great job with him and ask very insightful questions. How did that all transpire?
So I had been doing podcasts since about 2008 was when I first started professionally helping people set up podcasts. And I interviewed David for my own podcast, and it was an awesome interview. David was a lot deeper than I like to interview people about things that don't they don't usually get questioned on. I like to bring on people and I like to talk about things that won't get brought up on other podcasts. And David was a total sport about it. And we did a whole interview about the education system, which was way outside of what most people ever asked him. And it took a little bit of finagling, but eventually he agreed to it. And that is what eventually evolved into the Copywriters Podcast, which we're closing in on 100 episodes now and still going strong. So it's one of those things where I get to get mentored by one of the greatest people in my field and I get paid for it. So it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. And I got to tell the people out there, if you haven't listened to it, definitely subscribe to it because there are so many great foundational nuggets in that thing. I listen to it. I love it. I'm always getting great ideas from it. And man, it's you do a great job. That's all I'm going to say. So let's kind of evolve from that. And let's talk about copywriting and marketing and the things that you've learned, because I think your take on it is cool. I mean, the mind control aspect is something that, you know, most people don't really think about, but ultimately that's what copy is, right?
I'm going to take it back a couple of steps. So when I first started getting into this stuff, one of the very first books that I ever read was Propaganda by Edward Bernays. I think maybe me and you kind of spoke about this on Facebook a little bit, but it's not a very well-known book. Edward Bernays is kind of known as like the grandfather of marketing and public relations and propaganda. And he actually, interesting side note, because your podcast is called the Bacon Podcast, we were talking about this. I want to share this with the listeners. Up until Edward Bernays got involved with the bacon industry or with the pork industry, bacon actually wasn't part of the traditional American breakfast. What happened was the pork farmers were having a problem getting rid of the belly, the underside of the pigs. They could sell pork chops, they could sell sausage, they could sell all the different parts of the pig, even the pig's feet, but they were having trouble selling the underside of the bellies of the pigs. And the only thing that they could do was chop it up and slice it thin and make bacon out of it. But nobody bought bacon. It wasn't something that people thought of as an edible part of the pig. And so they brought Edward Bernays in. They said, hey, we have all of this leftover meat. We can't afford to just dispose of it. It's costing too much to dispose of it. We need to figure out some sort of way to make a profit off of what we're just throwing away and paying to throw away. And so he created a campaign where he rebranded the traditional American breakfast as bacon and eggs. Up until that time, the traditional American breakfast was actually oatmeal. That's what most people ate for breakfast, or fruit. And he ran a campaign saying, hey, the traditional American breakfast, what real Americans eat for breakfast is bacon and eggs. It gives you a good start to the day. You get your protein, you get your animal fats, you get everything that you need to take on the day. And he rebranded bacon and eggs as the American breakfast. And learning about that type of stuff was what really kind of piqued my interest into getting into all of this stuff. And I just was always fascinated about how dictators throughout history could take control of entire populations and how they could lead populations down these horrible, horrible paths. And 99% of the people would just walk off the cliff with them and wouldn't even realize that they were going in a wrong direction. And I was always troubled by how are people so easily manipulated? And so I come into marketing with that background. And so I see everything through that lens. I see everything through what's psychologically going on. What are the triggers that are being pulled in people? What's going on in their subconscious that makes them compelled to make a buying decision? So I kind of approach my marketing in a very non-traditional way compared to most of the marketers and copywriters out there.
Yeah. See, now I love that. Now, let me stop one thing right here. That, my friends, is a sizzling hot bacon knowledge bomb about the origins of how bacon started. Dude, that is fantastic. And so that's a golden nugget right there. But more importantly, marketing in general is basically getting people to want something that they don't necessarily need, you know, but then they find out that they want it. I mean, I'm dealing with this with the laser blanket for my dog. I know you've seen that online. I've done a lot of podcasts about it. And, you know, the The traditional way of doing things is basically just saying, here's all the features, here's all the benefits and this kind of stuff. But really what it's about is creating an emotion, you know, a connection that says, I love my dog so much. I don't care what it's going to cost, what it's going to take. I need to get this thing now. And essentially what you're saying with dictators and with propaganda and things like that is that's what it does, right? I mean, it just stirs such a deep seated emotion. I did a great podcast on the psychology of social media, and that was part of it too. You know, it's like people just get so emotional about this stuff, you know, when it comes to politics or whatever it is that they're into, that they're willing to defend it almost with their lives and reputation, right?
Mm-hmm. So a key takeaway, and I'm gonna go a little bit off subject and then bring it back. Another thing that Edward Bernays was famous for was the tobacco industries. And this was before all of the science was in about how bad tobacco was. This was way back in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. The tobacco industry was like, hey, we're only able to sell to half of the population. Men buy cigarettes, men buy cigars, but women, it's been taboo for them to smoke. They don't like cigarettes. They don't like they don't like our product. We're blocked out of half of the marketplace. So what he actually did was he created a campaign called Torches of Freedom or Torches for Freedom. And what he did was he organized a protest through, he made it look like it was a grassroots protest. He organized it throughout the entire United States. And what he did was he had grassroots organizations that were feminist organizations, feminist-ran organizations, and he had his people infiltrate them, and he said, on this particular day, to fight back against the patriarchy, we're going to have all of the women who care about women's rights, they're going to go out, they're going to walk out of their jobs, they're going to walk out of their house, they're going to go out into the middle of the street, and in a solidarity stand of defiance against the patriarchy, they're going to light up their cigarette, and they're going to stick it to the man by smoking a cigarette. Because up until that point, women were like, oh gosh, I would never be caught dead with a cigarette. He pulled off that campaign, and all of a sudden it became socially acceptable for women to smoke cigarettes. A lot of women became hooked on cigarettes, and a lot of women it opened up a whole new half of the marketplace that was locked to the tobacco companies. What his approach to that was, what his approach to marketing in general was he said, when people buy your product, what are they saying to people about it? If they buy a Nike sweater, it's because they're trying to tell people that they're athletic. If they buy a Cuban Link chain, it's because they're trying to tell people that they're a gangster. If they buy a cowboy hat, it's because they're trying to tell people something about themselves. They're trying to express their individuality through what they purchase. So to tell people that you're a good American, that you're a traditional American, buy bacon and eggs. To tell people that you're standing up against the patriarchy, make sure that you're buying cigarettes. And so that's a secret. You're trying to sell something. One of the key ingredients to really getting sales is to say, when my customer buys this, what are they telling the world about themselves when they buy that? And if you can do that, if you can say, what value are they expressing? How are they expressing their individuality by buying what I buy? If you know what that is and you can work that into your marketing, you can just get so many more sales because you're connecting with them. And now it's not about buy my product. It's about express your individuality.
Mm. Yeah, very cool and very deep. And so how do we take that and now kind of focus it back on what we're trying to do, which is stand out from the noisy world, get people to pay attention to what we're doing, and actually convert that passion into sales.
So what I like to do before I start any piece of sales copy, one of the things that I like to do is I like to actually go through and interview both the people that I'm writing to and the people that I'm writing for. So if I can get some of their previous customers, I like to interview them. If I can get the director of marketing, if I can get the person that's actually the owner, the founder of the business, and ask them some questions, I really like to do that. One of the things that I really like to focus on, that I don't see very many people actually focus on this, but this is kind of the secret sauce to my marketing, is I like to ask them, who are the villains that your market sees as they're standing against? And then what are the values that your market sees as themselves standing up for? So and the reason why I do this is like, say I'm writing for the weight loss niche, and I know that the people that are out there struggling, trying to lose that extra 10 pounds, they don't want to blame themselves. They want to blame a villain. They want to, before they can address the problem, they have to be able to say, well, it's somebody else's fault. It's just the way that we are as people. And I'm not trying to fight the way that we are. I'm just going to work with the way that we are.
No, I'm with you on that, because it's not my fault, dude. It's the McNuggets. It is.
Exactly. And so what I do is say it's the weight loss industry. I'm going to say, hey, you're overweight, you're fat, you're out of shape, but it's not your fault. It's the evil corn farmers. They're subsidized. The government gives them money. Do you know what corn is? Corn is actually used to fatten up livestock. Corn is a filler food, and they put corn in everything. Because corn is so heavily subsidized, there's corn syrup, there's corn meal, there's corn, you know, corn tortillas, corn chips, there's corn in almost everything. It's not your fault that you're fat. It's the fault of the food industry. And they've made everything so addictive. They've chock filled it full of preservatives. And now that I have their villain, now that I say it's not your fault, it's actually this villain's fault. And I can stand next to him and I can throw rocks at that villain with him. I can say, hey, I'm against that guy too. And now they feel like I'm on their side, and then I can present something to them. Here's an alternative. Here's a way to cook without having to use all that food. Or here's a way to do your shopping so that you can avoid all of that food. Or here's an easy workout that you can do that actually counteracts the effects that all the corn and all the sugar has on you. Whatever the case may be, I need to know who their villains are. Same thing with what their virtues are. I need to know what do they really believe in. Who are they fighting against, and why are they fighting? What are they fighting for? What is it that they find to be worth defending? What is it that they find to be worth, you know, putting their neck out on the line for? If you can identify those things and you can put them into your marketing, you can make them a part of your messaging. People will automatically be drawn to your marketing. They'll want to share your marketing. If they buy your product, they're going to want to tell other people, I bought this because of this, and you've got to check this out because of this. Before I even write a piece of sales copy, I'm really in tune with what my market's values are and who my market's villains are, and I exploit it in every single piece of my sales copy.
See, that's another sizzling hot bacon knowledge bomb. I mean, that whole villain and hero side of things. So there's a guy that I interviewed, his name is Michael Haig, and he talks about the hero's two journey, which is the hero's journey, which is kind of like a storytelling tool. He talks a lot about that, but this is the first time that I've heard the hero villain part pulled together. And I got two more questions for you. Number one, is there a way to do that without vilifying part of your audience? Because that's part of the challenge. And you know, example again with the dog coats, I don't want to vilify vets, because vets are a competitor. They're selling laser treatments in their office. So if you buy one of these coats and put it on your dog, you don't need to go to their office and do that. So it's, but I also want them to be supportive of it at the same time. So how do you kind of work around something like that?
I mean, it's kind of complicated. I'm going to give two different answers. So number one is you can pick a different villain. If you say, I'm not comfortable going after this villain for whichever reason the case may be, you can pick a different villain. My thing is, though, if it's really who your market says is a villain, if they really see, I mean, if your market sees the vet as the bad guy, and this isn't the comfortable thing to say, right, but sometimes you have to sacrifice some aspect of the market to gain the other. And that's the one thing that I think is, in my opinion, one of the biggest mistakes that most business owners make. And I'm not saying go after vets, because right, I don't know the exact scenario of your situation, but the one thing that I see most people make mistakes when it comes to this particular aspect of copywriting is they're too afraid to take a solid stand, because they say, I don't want to turn off 10, 20, 30% of my market. But they don't understand that by turning off that 20% of your market, you're going to turn the other 70% into ravenous fans that won't go anywhere else, because you were the one person that was brave enough and willing to stand up. Look at politics. Mm-hmm. in order for a politician to do well, they absolutely have to have their haters. You can't be a middle of the road politician that everybody just kind of feels like so about. In order to have rabid fans that will defend you no matter how horrible you are, you have to run the risk, and you're going to have to just accept the fact that the other 50% of the population is just going to hate you with all their guts. I mean, you look at the birthers with Obama. You look at the conspiracy theorists with George Bush. You look at the Russian collusionist with Donald Trump. All of them, in order to have their hardcore fans, they have to just accept the fact that they're going to have people that are going to be rabid haters on the other side.
Great answer. And this is a topic I know we can go on for hours on, and I'd love to. As a matter of fact, I definitely want to have you back because I want to talk more about some of the things that you've talked about in depth. I mean, just the using politics or the mentality of politics and copywriting. I mean, it's a very cool subject, and I think there's a lot to be learned about it. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite books is This Revolution Will Not Be Televised by Joe Trippi, who was the guy who was working on the Howard Dean campaign before social media was social media. And it you know, there's a lot of good nuggets in there about how that, I hate to call it mind control, but it was how the messaging kind of hit the nerves that you were talking about. So there's some really good stuff that we could dig into. So the last question I want to ask you before we finish up is, let's kind of wrap this in a neat bow, hopefully tied together with bacon. When we're starting to write copy, I mean, a lot of people have, you know, writer's block. They just don't know where to start. And then the other side of the coin is that people tend to overcomplex their answers, their concepts. How do we, A, get started, and then B, you know, make sure that it's simple enough so it doesn't overkill the situation? So what's a good way to be able to reel yourself in to write copy?
Oh man, this could be a whole episode in itself. I'm going to keep it as simple as possible though. First of all, I'm going to say, start with market research. And typically whenever I do any kind of sales copy, especially for a client that I'm not super familiar already with their market, I'm going to spend at least a week doing market research before I even start writing anything. Again, I want to know who their villains are, what their virtues are. I want to know what their fears are. What's the worst thing that could possibly happen if they don't solve the problem? What's the ultimate dream solution? If I can only make one promise to them to get them to pay attention to what I've got, what is that one promise? Where are they paying attention? Where do they spend their time? Where do they go for their, where do they go for their entertainment? Where do they go for their information? Do they watch CNN? Do they watch Fox? Do they watch Alex Jones InfoWars? Do they go to YouTube? Do they spend time on Facebook? I want to know all of these things before I even start writing. Mm-hmm. Then the next question is, I want to know, and this will help me gauge how long my copy is going to be. How familiar are they? Are they familiar with the problem? Are they familiar that there's a solution? Are they familiar with my particular solution that I'm going to be presenting? The less familiar they are, the longer the copy is going to have to be. Also, how big of an ask am I trying to get out of them? Am I trying to get them to sign up for an email list? That's not going to need very much copy. Am I going to ask them to buy a $29 product? That might mean some medium length copy. Am I going to ask them to sign up for a multi-$1,000 product? I'm probably going to need a lot of copy to convince them to do that. So I want to know how familiar they are and how big of an ask am I trying to get them to agree to. And then the last thing is, I tend to have a lot of different templates that I work off of. I have, oh gosh, throughout the years, I've formulated and collected probably 30, 40 different templates. And depending on what the answers are to the first two questions, you know, what's my market all about, and how familiar are they with my solution, and how big is the ask that I'm trying to get them to agree to, then I'm going to pick one of the different templates that I'm going to use, and then I'm going to go from there. And then I write it, and I let it sit for a couple of days after I've written it. I go back and look at it with some fresh eyes, go through everything, read it aloud to make sure that it actually flows off of my tongue and actually sounds like something that somebody would speak rather than something that was typed out by the human resources department of Megacorp Incorporated. And then that's usually when I'm ready to go. So it's a process, but that's the three steps is do your research, find out how long the copy needs to be, and then settle on a template. And we can talk a little bit about, I actually have a freebie that I'd like to give away to your listeners that actually has one of my highest converting templates included in it.
Awesome. Yeah. Go ahead and tell us about that. Cause that's, I mean, what you, your answer was fantastic. I mean, it was exactly what I was looking for. So yeah, let's dig into that. What do you got for my audience?
Nice. So I have an advertiser's cheat sheet, and this is just some of the more hidden aspects, a lot of the stuff that most people won't tell you about when it comes to marketing and when it comes to advertising. So it goes over, again, 9 kind of foundational elements that I think every sales message should have, and I lay them out point by point. Your advertisement needs to have this, then it needs to be followed with this, then it needs to be followed with this, and summed up with this. I also include 5 different editing tricks that I go through after, like I said, I let my copy sit for a couple of days and then I go back and I edit it. So I include 5 different strategies that I edit with. And then a couple of things that, as a business owner, if you're looking to hire a copywriter, some things that you should ask and get some clarification on before you give anybody any money, and a couple of warning signs, things to look out for when you're looking for a copywriter to make sure that you don't hire somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing, because there's a lot of people that are decent writers that have no idea how to actually sell, and they're trying to pass themselves off as copywriters because you can make more money. You don't want to get a copywriter that's trying to swindle you and make money off of you. You want a copywriter that's going to help you make money. And so, I give you a couple things to look out for to help sift the wheat from the chaff and make sure that you actually hire somebody who knows what they're doing. And, if you want to get that guide, again, it's for free. I have it available over at, my website, which is copyandfunnels.com/guide. And that's, again, copyandfunnels.com/guide. And you can get your free advertiser's cheat sheet over there.
Cool. And for those of you listening and not checking out the podcast on my website, it's copyandfunnels. So make sure you put the AND in there. Mm. Nathan, man, this has been awesome. It's a pleasure to get to know you better. You brought some great sizzling hot bacon knowledge bombs and dropped them on my peeps. I wish I had some sound effects. man, I really appreciate you and your time and sharing your knowledge with my peeps. And I look forward to having you on again soon.
Dude, I had a blast. And again, I feel honored that you invited me on. So thank you.
Well, that's it for today's Bacon Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it and learned something today. If you did, please go to iTunes and give us a review. We appreciate all your feedback and comments. If you have any questions, go to www.baconpodcast.com/questions, and we'll make sure we get those answered for you. Till next time, keep sizzling.